At Her Spirit, we're here for you. We want to help you discover your potential, achieve your goals, ignite your fitness, find your community. Head to herspirit.co.uk and sign up for our core membership. Get access to our virtual classes, monthly challenges, expert advice, and track your progress in our health hub. You'll also find your very own cheerleading squad who will support you every step of the way. Use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 and get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Her Spirit podcast. Thank you so much to all of you for listening, for sending in your messages. I'm Louise Minchin, Annie Emerson, of course, alongside me, though she's not because she's in her home. I'm in my home because we're still on, what do we call this now, semi-lockdown?
No, we're not really so much in lockdown as social distancing.
As separated, aren't we?
Separated.
We're still separated.
I know,
it's which
very,
is very
sad.
Upsetting.
Yeah, it is.
So a couple of things. I've been listening to the podcast right from the beginning, and I think lots of people are joining at different points. So if you don't know who we are by this stage, you probably know quite a lot about us. We've been giving away a lot of personal information, Annie, by the way. So I'm Louise Minchin. I'm normally telling you bad news from the BBC Breakfast sofa. I'm also, I guess I call myself now an endurance athlete, and I met the lovely Annie while we were working on triathlon.
We've been working a couple of years now. We'd hoped to be working this year in Olympic year together on the BBC's coverage of the World Triathlon Series. That hasn't happened, has it, Lou? And not likely to happen this year.
No, not likely to happen. And also, you, of course, you would have been in Tokyo, wouldn't you now?
Yeah, I would have been in Tokyo, actually. Yeah, you're right. I was there for 2 weeks covering the men and the women's and the mixed relays race, which, you know, it's sad. It's sad from the work point of view, you know, the experience. But, you know, it's tough for everyone. So I'm a great believer in sort of things happen for a reason, and we kind of got to be positive about it.
So two things, listening, and you're right, I don't really like listening to myself. I was only listening to hear the guests, not myself. So first of all, I say I get goosebumps a lot. So I'm going to try and say that a little bit less. And secondly, Annie, every single podcast, except for one, mentions wine, and it's mostly you mentioning it.
I'm going to really try hard not to mention it. Although, you know what, actually, absolutely, I love my wine. I'm not embarrassed to say it. You know, I always say that it was because I pretty much grew up in Spain on and off most of my youth. And there, you always have wine on the table. So that's my excuse as to my love of wine, why I have such a love for it and why I like to drink lots of it.
I finally heard the reason why. So we've got a fantastic guest on this week. She's represented her country in football and in boxing. In 2018, she was the first ever British woman to win the Commonwealth boxing title. She is Stacey Copeland. And Stacey, do you drink wine?
I don't drink at all, to be honest. But I have to say, in lockdown, I did have a couple of drinks for like the first time in, I don't know, years. Because me and my boyfriend did theme nights where we thought we were like suddenly some kind of professional chefs, and we made like Italian themed meals, Thai, Indian, all different kinds of meals. And then we picked a drink that we thought went with it, which probably didn't. And we started off with trying like real wines and stuff, and I just didn't like the taste of them. So I ended up on Tutti Frutti cider. So I'm not that classy, it turns out, when it comes to a drink, but I had a little tipple. I only need one and my legs are wobbly anyway. I can't take it.
She's a cheap date. No, but that's you. You then are going to start by being a very good influence on me and Louise. In fact, more of an influence on me, because Louise is, you know, more of a moderate drinker. I'm not saying a heavy drinker, but I do like my wine. And I think that stems from spending a lot of my youth growing up in Spain. And of course, there, wine is part of a meal. So it's not really alcohol anyway, is it?
Stacey, so Take us back to you as a little girl, because you loved sport. You loved football. You loved boxing, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't really know why I loved football or where it came from, because without being rude, all of my family are crap at football. So I've no idea where that came from. But I just remember at playtime and lunchtime, it's all I wanted to do. And I did have girls who were mates, but the stuff they were doing just didn't appeal to me. So they were doing that thing with elastic bands. They were doing hopscotch. And having lots of weddings, which I wasn't interested in at all, and I'm still not. But I just wanted to play football. So it was just me and all the lads, and I loved every second. sadly, when I got to my first game for the school team, you know, it was so thrilling stepping out into, you know, a real football pitch with a real kit on and my little boots that my dad had bought me from Woolworths. And it was so exciting. And then a parent and a coach on the other team realised there was a girl and made a big thing about it and made me leave the pitch. And that was the first time I was really aware that being a girl might be an issue. And then, of course, in boxing, my dad was a boxer. My granddad ran our boxing gym. Me and my dad watched Rocky like it was a documentary. I mean, I thought Rocky was real and it was, you know, we absolutely loved it and we'd watch it. And then, you know, we'd be sort of sparring afterwards in the, you know, I'd always have to be Apollo and we'd have the fight and everything. And I just loved it. I loved everything about the boxing gym, even though they stink, they're dead smelly. It's, but I loved it. I loved the sounds, the sights, the camaraderie, the banter, the whole lot. And when it came to the age of, you know, when you can usually box, which is about 11, you know, me and my little lad mates who had all kind of come through together went to see my granddad and were like, oh, ready to box. And he said, oh, you can't box, kid. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, oh, it's illegal for females. And I just couldn't believe I wouldn't get to do the sport that I loved. So it was quite early that I recognised there would be issues. But it, for whatever reason, I don't know where resilience comes from, but those things didn't hold me back. You know, the minute I left the pitch, I went straight home and said to my mum, you need to cut my hair short. I need to, you know, be able to play. And my mum's no hairdresser. It was a pretty shocking haircut that she gave me, but it was the 80s and nobody had a really great bouffant, to be fair. So I got away with it. But, you know, the problem was then kids saying, why do you want to be a boy? Well, I never wanted to be a boy. I just wanted to play football. And back then that was the only way. So I don't know what it was that was in me, but I was very driven. I had a real deep passion for the sports that I wanted to do. And, you know, despite the barriers that were there, I continued to do it. And thank God I did. And the sad thing is loads of kids don't. And that's why I do what I do. And I try and be a voice for it, because it, people should be able to pursue what they're passionate about.
So, Stacey, I mean, a couple of things there. And, you know, the fact that boxing was illegal, it kind of, all those things always make me laugh. And I tell you why they make me laugh, because I think physically there is nothing tougher in the world than giving birth. So if women can give birth, and they always have given birth, why on earth were they at that time not allowed? I mean, we don't have to go into it. I kind of understand the world has changed and there was a time when women just weren't allowed to do things. But very interesting. I've never spoken to a female boxer ever before. And I just think, you know, the frustration at those times for you must have been pretty great, because you're there, a young kid, you're fit and you're well, and you're going, why can't I box? Why can't I play football? I mean, thankfully, things have changed, but it has been a slow process and we could argue, totally there yet.
I think part of the problem why it's taken so long for women's sport as well as women's boxing to progress is because we've been lied to for a very, very long time. And I grew up with those lies that women are not as good, we're inferior, we're the other, we're less than, nobody wants to watch it, nobody's interested in it, we'll never be any good, and sport isn't for us. Those are all lies that I believed growing up, despite loving my sport, despite committing to my sport, despite being around incredibly talented young women and older women in football, boxing and other sports. I believed that narrative because that's what society told me. On an individual level, you know, my experience was being called shim and shemale and boy. People's understanding was that if I wanted to do boys' sports, I must therefore want to be a boy. And as a wider society, it was those messages that it wasn't a place where we belonged. Those are all lies. None of that's true. You know, we didn't let women run at one time because they said we'd get big legs, hairy chest, and our uterus would fall out. And like, to your point, Annie, how ridiculous that nobody ever stopped and said, well, we actually pass an entire human being through that area and no other stuff drops out, so surely we'll be all good to go running. You know what I mean? How ridiculous. But these are the lies that we've been told and people have believed them. We're at the stage now where we're still breaking those lies down and discovering actually women are phenomenal at running, especially endurance running. We are absolutely incredible at it, and it's no surprise given all the other things that we're great at. So I think it's the reason it's taking so long is because we've been told a big, massive lie, and now we're starting to realise it just wasn't true.
How old are you, Stacey?
38.
So 38, you see, I'm quite a bit older than you, and I'm genuinely sort of still listening to you, kind of shocked that even, you know, somebody who's a lot younger than me, that still has affected you in a big way, actually. I mean, you've got through it, you've done incredible stuff, but it did affect you.
Massively. I spent years, honestly, Louise, years and years thinking, what's wrong with me? There must be something wrong with me. Is it either that I want to be a boy, or am I trapped in the wrong body? What's wrong with me? Actually, there's nothing wrong with me. It's just that, you know, society wasn't ready for me and other women like me. And the really sad thing, and what motivates me every single day, is that, you know, usually we have kids come in the gym, you know, if the parents contact me and say, oh, can you give us some advice about boxing? I say, I'll bring them in and they watch a session and we do pads with them afterwards or whatever. We haven't been able to do that in lockdown. So I've done a lot of Zoom calls with young boxers. And I did one with a 12-year-old and her mum the other week. And she's 12. She's a goalkeeper. Absolutely loves her football. Like, already thinking about going to America and doing some of the things I've done. And she, on a daily basis, is getting called names and being put down. People questioning their sexuality, as they used to do with me and still do now. And it's just really sad to me that kids are still facing this. And there's a stigma that boys face as well. You know, I get messages from parents who's, you know, sons love ballet, or they might want to be a nurse, and they face stigma because they're, you know, challenging society's definition of masculinity, as I challenge femininity. And that's why boxing is one of the last stands in that, because it really does challenge our definition of femininity. And that's why it's taking so long. But yeah, that's what motivates me every day, because it's still happening and it's not good enough. People should be able to pursue what they love and what they're passionate about, regardless of gender and stereotypes.
So, Stacey, while we've been talking, Annie, you've been wandering around your house. You finally sat down, and I know we're not going to be able to. What's really normally quite cool on these podcasts is we can see each other. And Annie, you've had to replace yourself, and I think we should tell people at home by what you've had to replace yourself.
I could replace the poo, couldn't I, that my lovely Zoe put up there for me. That's obviously what my daughter thinks of me, isn't it? I'm a big turd.
Annie, you go for a question.
So, Stacey, interesting, firstly, go back to your football career, and you paid for the Doncaster Belles. It's a great name, but it's quite a girly name, that, isn't it? Doncaster Belles. Where does that come from?
The Doncaster Belles, I always wanted to play for, because they were the first established official women's team in 1969, 2 years before the 50-year ban on women's football in this country was lifted. When I was growing up, really the only team you ever saw was Doncaster Belles, because they always reached FA Cup final. That was the only thing that was ever covered. So they became the team that I always wanted to play for. And I actually started my career at Stockport County. Then my first Premier League team was Tranmere Rovers. But then I got the opportunity to go to Doncaster Belles, and it was just, I felt like I'd walked into like the Hall of Fame when I walked in, and there was all these players who I'd looked up to so much. It was just an incredible feeling. And to be honest, the people at Doncaster and Yorkshire in general really are just fabulous. It was just a fantastic club to play for. And we had a real, really good mix of people, an amazing chemistry. And we still have reunions now, and nobody's ever lived anything down that they've ever done. We had one player who once was getting changed. All she did was have a white bra on, like a plain white bra. And she has been called Church Bra for the last like 20 years, because, and it just always comes out. She's never ever, that was all she did. She just wore a white bra once. Everyone was like, oh my God, have you been to church? Church Bra, Church Bra. And that was it. It's been her nickname. Like, she's like, whatever, she's now late 30s and everyone's still calling her Church Bra. So nobody's ever lived anything down ever.
And how did you go from that little girl who cut her hair short? And I've seen the pictures of your short hair. I remember I used to be called Laddie because I used to have short hair for different... I don't know why I used to have short hair. I think my mum just cut it short. Anyway, I didn't have a choice when I was 7. For that little girl, cutting your hair short, and then there you are some years later, getting the call up for the England team. What a moment.
It was unbelievable. Obviously, they get an email now. It was a letter back then. And getting that letter with the three lions on was just the most incredible feeling. And I read the first bit. It said, "We are delighted to inform you." And I was like, oh, you know, and I thought, I better read the rest of it. And I read it again and again and again just to make sure. And I'd been selected basically for the European Championship. So I'd already been to the trials and the training and got picked. And I went along to my boss, actually, at the time. I worked in a factory like wholesalers. And there was, you know, there were no availability holiday rota. So I went to see my boss and I said, oh, I need a week off. And he said, what for? So I gave him this letter and I was absolutely like practically floating with excitement. And he looked at the letter and he didn't really say too much. And then he said, you want me to give you a week off to play for a women's football team? I said, well, is the England women's football team? I said, and he made all these jokes and he was like laughing. And I said, look, it really means a lot to me. Can I just take it unpaid? To which he said, yes. And it had a profound effect, that, because I walked out of the office feeling really small, feeling like an idiot for thinking it was a big deal to play for the England women's football team, not the England football team. And I didn't tell any of my colleagues. I didn't tell anyone else. And even during the anthem, I was thinking, it's not quite what I thought it would be. And that's why it's so important for, you know, these podcasts, for the work that you do, for the work that I do, to raise our voices, to get that message through, especially to young people as early as possible, that, you know, you are just as good. It's just that society has this certain perception, but it's not true. It's just as valuable and just as difficult competing at the top level in women's sport as it is in men's, and it should be treated as such.
When you came back to your job, what was the reaction?
I mean, my friends were amazing. They couldn't believe it because it was in the paper. And they were like, have you been to play? Because they just thought, I guess they just thought I did a bit of Sunday football, and it was, which is fine, but obviously it was more than that. And they were like, oh my God, like you've played for your country. And they really made a big thing of it. And that made me feel a lot different. You know, it was, and that's why it's so emotional now for me watching things like the World Cup last year, when me and my boyfriend went to his local pub and there was all these people in there watching and these massive sponsors involved with it that you could see pitch side, and the BBC covered it. And it was really, really emotional seeing where we'd got to from where we were. And likewise, taking my niece Ruby to the Man United and Man City women's game at the Etihad last year with 31,000 people, to sit there with her experiencing that from where we were years ago was just very emotional. And that's, you know, that change doesn't just happen. People make it happen. And there's thankfully so many people committed to making that happen and continue to do so.
I've got a question for you from Jane, actually, Stacey. This is, she says, women's football is more acceptable now, as we've been talking about, but how do we get more women playing the sport and being great models to those around you? Stacey.
I don't think we have to do anything to make them great role models, because I think, you know, the wonderful niche market, if you can put it that way, of women's football is that they are very accessible and approachable to everybody. You know, going to the games, you see them waiting afterwards to meet young people. And it's not lost on any of us that this is a great opportunity for us. It's a great moment and we want to make the most of it to inspire the next generation. So I don't think there's any work necessarily to do there. In terms of opening up opportunities, the approach that I take with Pave the Way is question it, challenge it, change it. And I think quite often we don't question things, and just because things have always been a certain way doesn't mean that they're right. And I think we, you know, if we're not getting the participation levels that we want, then I think we should question why is that, challenge the differences that are there, and then be part of implementing change. And there's a lot of reasons why women might not get into football. There's one example I alluded to before, that 12-year-old girls are playing football and getting called names. So, you know, an entire social change is needed, and perceptions, coverage. The way we talk about it, you know, when we talk about the women's England football team, that's fine, but we should also say men's England football team. We shouldn't say the England football team as if one's more important and better. We should be more equal by now. So I think there's a lot that can be done.
You've talked, Stacey, about, like, openly about how passionate you are about the positive impact of sport on people's lives, and in 2017 founded Pave the Way. Tell us a little bit about this.
Well, I just believe deeply, deeply that sport is one of the most powerful things on the planet for bringing about positive change. And what happens in sport, the progress, whether it's for the LGBT community, race, gender, disability, whatever it is, manifests in other areas of society. That is why it's so important. It can reach people in ways that other things can't. So I think it's really crucial. And I've been privileged to have a passion for sport all my life, and seen, you know, when I've been to the refugee camps and done sport with children, when I've done community projects, you know, in my own city and in our country, I see what it does. And so Pave the Way very much came out of that, and initially was about girls and women in sport, in my sport specifically. And it was only meant to be for a week. It was during Women's Sport Week in 2017, which coincided with my debut. Now, in boxing, you usually have a nickname when you turn professional. So you might have the Assassin or the Cobra or something intimidating. But my nickname to all my friends, because they're all horrible, is SpongeBob SquarePants. the reason for that is, one, my mates are mean, but also whenever I've been injured and put weight on, I turn into a very square-shaped human being. Now, SpongeBob SquarePants isn't the best name for a boxer, so I decided to go with something I stood for and represented, which was Paving the Way. So this one-week project was like, I visited schools, community groups. We did a photography exhibition of women who work in sport, which is on display at the Velodrome in Manchester. And we did an Inspiration Day for high school girls. And that was it. And I thought, oh, it was great. Really enjoyed it. Didn't think much of it. But then everyone was hashtagging it, and we really resonated with people. And so it's really grown from there. And now 3 years in, we got charity status 10 weeks ago. Obviously, we've been in lockdown, so we haven't been able to do loads of that just yet. But it's now about both genders, because there's, like I say, there's a lot of boys facing this stigma when they challenge masculinity, and I don't think that's good enough for us to settle for. And it's also about other industries, because the amount of women I've met now who have faced barriers like I have, but in law, tech, construction. So it's now about all industries, but with sport at the heart of it, and about both genders. And I really hope that we can do all we can to, you know, remove gender as a barrier to human potential, because it should no longer be.
And well done. Congratulations on the charitable status. That's absolutely brilliant. How much, I mean, you get lots of, you were talking a little bit earlier about getting young people into your gym. Do you see it just turn their lives around sometimes?
At Her Spirit, we know how powerful women can be. We love your strength, your determination, your compassion. We love the energy that sparks when we connect and spur each other on. Her Spirit was created to ignite that flame of determination, to unleash your energy, to build your self-belief, and to help every woman find a way to your healthiest mind, body, and soul yet. We want to inspire 1 million women just like you to be active, healthy, and happy, because you deserve it. Head to herspirit.co.uk, join our core membership, and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. Join our monthly challenges, get access to the Her Spirit Health Hub, and track your activity levels, mood, food, sleep, and stress every single week with your own personalised dashboard. Get expert advice and join daily live classes that can be played back at any time. Plus, find the support that you need to get started and stay motivated. Just sign up at herspirit.co.uk and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, sometimes you don't see it straight away, do you? It's something later on. But I think one of the other things is speaking to people at the other end of the careers, you know, those who, when you get chatted to everyday people at these talks that I do or events that I'm at, and they'll say, oh, I did this as a kid and I did that as a kid. And it might not have been the elite level anywhere near it, but they've got this vivid memory of when they had that mentor who was a coach, or these teammates who were a big part of the life, or this purpose that it gave them. And it might not have been, you know, something they ended up doing, but it still really impacted them. So we know what it can do for people. And sometimes it's not till later that they draw on those experiences and that it can have a big impact in their life. But, you know, the sooner we can sort of introduce it to young people, the better. Because, I mean, everything that I've got out of it, how can I not want to pass that on and pay that forward to others, as many have done for me?
Stacey, when we kind of look at what's gone on in the last few months in this country, there's a message here from Holly. Actually, COVID-19 has had a dramatic impact on women, with only 30% being active enough for a health benefit. You know, how do we change this within society? I mean, you and me and Louise, we're all incredibly passionate. We understand the, you know, the real benefits of being active, but how do we change, I guess, the opinion of others and motivate people enough to do something to make change?
I think one of the things for lockdown is, and I've felt this since the beginning, and I do still work in a school one day a week. And I mean, I'm involved in lots of things that I'm passionate about. So, you know, I have sport, I have the radio, I have my public speaking, I have the charity, but I also do a job in a school. And so I'm involved with lots of different people from all walks of life. And I think when I was hearing people say at the beginning, we're all in the same boat, that wasn't true. We're in the same storm, but we're all in very, very different boats. And I was seeing a lot of really positive stuff about families being out on bikes, people assembling these incredible weight benches and little mini multi-gym stations in the gardens and doing these incredible online sessions in the homes. And that's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant. People going out walking, accessing nature, you know, doing far more than they've ever had a chance to do, which is great. Then there's another totally different demographic of people like my sister, who's got two children. She's trying to work from home and juggling all of that. It's very, very difficult to then get on a bike, leave your kids at home. And, you know, so we've got single parents, we've got people who, you know, also still, because of traditional gender roles, although women are working from home or not, still a massive amount of childcare, you know, looking after the home, cleaning, cooking and all that still is put on and expected, you know, by women. And so there's that aspect as well. And then there's, you know, there's economics that, you know, some people are in a very, very small confined space in a flat with lots of children. Lots of my families, the children I work with at school, have not got adequate housing. They're not provided for properly. And to then get internet and be jumping up and down in a high-rise flat doing exercises and buying bikes for the whole family is just not possible. So I think there's a lot of reasons why, and that's the problem sometimes with statistics. It's not that women don't want to, it's maybe there's a lot of barriers that not all women face and not all men face. And so I think there's a lot to look at of how we help different demographics access sport and activity.
I think you're making lots of really good points there. And this week we've been talking about on breakfast about the government, you know, prescribing exercise, or GPs giving you bikes. But you're right. I mean, you know, lots of people don't perhaps even know how to ride a bike, for example.
Yeah. And, you know, there's that confidence element. There's, you know, access to it. If you can afford bikes for you and your family, if you're competent now, you know, we used to have swimming lessons as part of school curriculum and that no longer is the case. So if you can't afford them, children don't necessarily get to learn how to ride a bike or go swimming and do all of those things. So I think there's a lot of reasons that are barriers, but in particular for women, because like I say, a lot of the childcare and homeschooling and all of that is expected of women. So there's a lot to juggle. And if you can fit exercise in, brilliant, but not everybody can and they haven't got the means to do it.
I feel very lucky because you probably didn't see the hand reach over to me and somebody bring me a cup of tea, which was my husband, which is, so I am, you know, I'm lucky and I get, you know, we're all in our different, I loved what you said about the same storm, but not the same boat. I think that's very, very, a real insight into what's going on with people. I want to talk to you about so many things. So let's move on to boxing. So you started boxing. I mean, I have never boxed in my life, ever. So just explain to, you know, start right from the beginning. It's, for me, to hit someone is a big deal.
Absolutely. And it's a very odd sport, without a doubt. It's a very strange sport. It's not a nice, pleasant sport. God knows why some of us love it, but then...
No, I can see why you do. I'm not saying that at all.
No, it's great for fitness.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. But to compete is strange, and it's at odds with, you know... Like when you first start, being hit is also odd because it's, you know, and you kind of have to transfer it from the outside. It seems like hitting someone and someone hitting you.
Yeah.
To a boxer, there's a technical, skillful element to it of you've landed that punch because your footwork was in place, your timing was good, your technique was good. So you're kind of looking at it through a skill lens as opposed to just hitting someone. So it's kind of a different mentality, but it does take a while to get into that when you start.
And also to that point, when you say being hit as well, because if somebody hit me, I would just feel rage.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think for me, I mean, I was learning from being a little kid, so it was kind of second nature to me. And you learn all the basics and then you start sparring. And when you get hit, all you think is, oh, what did I not do then? What was I not covering up? Or why did I leave a gap? Or what did I not do defensively? And you're thinking, how can I get that point back? I need to get that point back. The judges will have seen that, you know, or what will my coach think or whatever. So you are thinking technically, you know, from a skill and sport. And boxing's so difficult. Like when anyone tries it, there's so much to think about. For a start, you're trying to breathe because your heart rate's like, you know, really high for the whole 2 or 3 minute round. You're thinking about your footwork, your movement, where you are in the ring, you know, how you're going to sort of go at the opponent, how you're going to defend yourself, and all while you're trying to breathe. You know, it's a lot to take in. So it's, it doesn't feel like hitting and being hit, really. There's so much technicality to it that you're focused on that more.
You talk about fitness, you've got to be supremely fit, which you are.
It's very different to football. I think in football, you know, when the whistle goes, you are all competing together. In boxing, you're very much part of a team, but when the bell goes, you do the competing bit on your own. So that's obviously different, but you still always feel part of a team. But obviously, because there's other players on the pitch, if you get hurt, you can take a moment to gather yourself, get up, shake it off. In boxing, you can't do that. You have to just carry on, even if something's really, really hurting. You have to hope that you can get through the round and get that 1 minute with your coach to try and patch everything back up, and then you're back out there.
So what's your coach telling you in that 1 minute?
It depends what it is. I think in the Commonwealth title fight, my coach was just so unbelievable because I didn't know. I mean, she was a unit. She hit really hard. And
I've heard you talk about her being a unit.
Really, really hard. I mean, and she had an hard head. I mean, my tendon came off my knuckle in that fight because she had a rock hard head. But
your tendon came off your knuckle?
Yeah, it was huge when I finished the fight. And I was maid of honour at my sister's wedding 2 weeks after that. And she'd said, do not, under any circumstances, get a black eye. And I was like, I can't go into the biggest fight of my life thinking about not getting a black eye for your bloody wedding. But that was like her world title, her wedding. Like, she's one of them who's always wanted the big wedding, and I'm the total opposite. Like, oh, no. So I had to have all these bridesmaid dresses, I had to have eyebrow torture, nails stuck on me and all sorts of things. But what happened was, when I got out the ring, I took my glove off and my hand was huge because I had this tendon. But I didn't have a black eye, and I was like, oh, when we got back in the changing room, I was like, at least I haven't got a black eye. And everyone was like, I was like, what? And they said, have you not seen that? And I could see something out the corner of my eye, but I didn't take much notice. And I had this humongous lump, massive lump over my eyebrow. And my coach used what we call an iron, and he put it in ice, and he just pushed the lump away.
No,
so
brutally
painful. Yeah, brutally painful, but it was gone in time for the wedding, so it was all good. My sister was happy.
So take us back to the fight. And I think Annie's had a terrible... She's having a shocker on this podcast. She keeps connecting and then going away. She's currently in... And Steve's got a picture of herself as a climber, but I don't think that's her, Stacey. It does look like her, but I don't think
it is me.
Oh, is that you?
Yes.
Oh, gosh, she's... for you listening at home, she's got the most awesome picture of her on this kind of orange, bright orange and red climbing wall, looking like the strong woman that you are, Annie. I didn't know you were a climber, Annie.
I used to climb a lot, yeah. I used to do a lot of things before my children came along.
Every time we learn something. And we were just talking about the Commonwealth fight, Annie. I don't know how much of you were able to hear that. So I'll go back into the rings. And you described her as having a hard head.
Yeah, she was really tough, very, very, very strong. And that, for me, was a massive fight, because I knew there was the potential to become the first British woman to win the title. And it felt like there was a lot of pressure. I knew it was being live streamed back home. There was over 100 million people watched it in Africa because it was on the free Continent Sports Channel. So, and there'd been a massive build-up that week. So it was, there was an enormous amount of nerves. But that's where it's really important to know your why, because beyond me wanting that personal challenge and reminding myself while I was going through those nerves, this is exactly what you wanted. And you're meant to feel like this if you're going for a dream that's that big. You're supposed to be frightened to death. There was also the element that I knew I wanted to inspire others and pave the way. And I thought, you know, when you're given these opportunities, you have to step up and make them count and do your best, because that means other people can. So it was crucial to get it right on the night. And then it was just an amazing experience winning the fight. And then obviously afterwards, I didn't get a belt, which is the real disappointment.
Stacey, talk us a little bit through your training. From my point of view, and as an endurance athlete, you know, a lot of people go, wow, you know, it's really hard. But actually, the intensity can be quite steady a lot of the time. Whenever I've had a go at boxing, you know, within 30 seconds, you're like, actually, this is a whole different ball game.
And I think it's like anything, you know, if I tried to play football now, I mean, aside from the fact that I probably won't be able to walk for about a week, the last time I played football was years ago, and I couldn't even sit down in my car properly. I had to like hold on to the roof to like lower myself down into the car. It was sad. And even sitting down on the toilet, like getting from the standing position to sitting on the toilet, was like horrendously painful. So other than that, I wouldn't last 90 minutes in a game. But obviously I'm fit for boxing. So I think obviously if you trained to do boxing, you would, you know, your body would adapt. Just like me, if I tried endurance stuff, I'd be probably not in a very good state after a short time. So, you know, you adapt any training, I guess, to your body. And some of us, our physical makeup lends itself better to different sports, obviously. And if you find that sport that matches your passion with your talent and your body type, then happy days.
So we talked a little bit before we started the podcast. You talked about spinning on your bike, for example. You know, is that's that whole cliche about skipping, for example. What other things do you do?
I do far less impact now because I've got major problems with my knees from years of football, arthritis predominantly. So my knees are very severely damaged, which isn't going to get better. It only gets worse, obviously. So that's something I've really got to be careful to manage, because as much as I love sport, I want to be active for the rest of my life. And there's sport that I've always done for goals. I've been obviously very goal-oriented as an athlete, But then there's the fact that I love being active for my well-being, and I only last a few days without exercise, and then I'm well grumpy. There should be a word for like lack of exercise, like there is for hangry. There should be an equivalent word for that, because I get that, whatever that is. I'm really not happy after a few days. So I do a lot of spinning. I've been doing a lot of online classes for the women who usually come to the boxing gym, and I do like fitness boxing classes for them. So I've been doing those online. I've just started open water swimming, actually, which I've loved. And I've got a big group of the women to come the other week, and some of them were really not keen, and they like waded out a little bit. But that's what's great about, you know, women supporting each other and encouraging each other to do it, that they, none of them would have done that without each other. And yet they all kind of encouraged each other to get in. And then some even had a bit of a swim to like the first buoy and came back, and some went a couple of times, and it was just fantastic. And I think it's actually an underrated superpower of women, that we're incredible at supporting each other. And if you look at even from an early age, Disney, it's always the horrible, ugly witch woman being horrible to the beautiful princess. And in romantic comedies, they're always gouging each other's eyes out. That has not been my experience of women. Women are incredible at supporting each other, helping each other. And I think when you apply that to things like sport and activity, unbelievable communities are built, and we can achieve incredible things. So, and that was one of them. It was great. There was some, I have to say, there was some really dodgy swim outs, though. Some of them, I'm really not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure about them.
There's been a brilliant buzz on the Her Spirit community as well, because this weekend they did a virtual, it was meant to be Leeds, but they did a virtual version of that. And Annie, I've just been reading some of those messages. I didn't do it because, well, various reasons. I did the bike ride, but my knees are really sore, Annie, at the moment. What's going on as a coach?
Do you know what? I think that, I mean, you know, what Stacey has with, you know, arthritic knees, you know, as you said, Stacey, that not a lot you can do with that. I think diet can help a lot, you know, a lot of good fatty fish. You know, there's quite a lot of supplements out there that are really good and will support your joints. But Lou, I think sometimes it can be hormones, women of our age.
That's what I was thinking.
But I think, you know, it can. And sometimes I find myself, and this is a message to women out there kind of listening to us talk about sport, go, oh yeah, I can't do it because it hurts. Sometimes sport does hurt. And I definitely go through different phases of thinking, this feels really okay, to, oh my God, this hurts. So I think always make sure your water intake is up, like hydrate properly. That's another thing that I'm terrible at, drinking water, actually. And I guess if I actually, you know, we should all write little notes to ourselves and a diary. And I bet if you look back at that, Louise, and yeah, or she's sipping her coffee now, that's probably not such a good thing, but
it's tea.
Tea, maybe a bit better than coffee. That you might find there is some correlation to sort of like, you know, slight knee pain and joint pains to your diet, to your hormones.
Do you know what, Annie? I'm just stop you there. So I did notice last week I wasn't drinking much water. So it genuinely could be something like that. And I felt sorry, Stacey, we're going off on a sort of, I've been wanting to ask Annie this.
No, there's not enough research about this though, is there? That because they haven't cared about women in sport.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the progress that's been made in sport in general is because science has had a massive role to play in it. That's what it is. You know, the equipment that they wear, the nutrition, the recovery, loads of stuff. And they haven't done that as much as extensively into women specifically. And I think over the, you know, next few years, as we start to properly look at how do periods affect you, all of my knee injuries, because I'm a real nerd when it comes to training diaries, like a mega nerd. I've got training diaries that go back like 10 years that nobody ever, ever, ever will be interested in. Like if you found it under a tree or something in a time capsule, like, my God, those people lived a really boring life. So I've got training diaries from ages. But what it does show is that whenever I've had significant knee injuries, it has been in my premenstrual cycle, because the hormones impact our bodies far more. And I've obviously got a propensity for knee injuries anyway, as a lot of women have, and it definitely affects it massively. So it's really important, actually, that we look into how that affects your training.
And do you know what? We're speaking to, in a couple of weeks, actually, Mel, our producer, Her Spirit founder, will tell us. We're speaking to somebody in a couple of weeks who's done exactly this research. She lives in New Zealand, and she talks about, really specifically, you know, women, and we're not small men or whatever. It's very, very different. I've got a couple of questions for you, Stacey, that I want to put to you. And this is from Lisa, and this is a question I wanted to ask anyway. And she talks about, you know, women in boxing have had to fight a long, hard battle for equality in professional boxing, despite the presence of women and girls in boxing across the country for years. She says it's really encouraging to see women like you break through into the professional scene. What advice do you give to people who fancy training at entry level, both women and girls?
my view of this has completely changed over the years. I used to think that if you weren't going to compete, you shouldn't go in a boxing gym. But that's because I'd been raised in the time when you didn't go in a boxing gym unless you were a boxer. You didn't have this, you know, you've been at the office all day and then you want to go and punch a bag. It just didn't really happen. It was much later that came here. Now I think it's a fantastic thing and I'm a massive advocate for it because I think boxing is a brilliant form of training. And because there's so much to think about, you kind of, like all the ladies that come to our class, you know, a lot of them have got a lot of difficult situations, are single parents, two are carers, one's a carer for a husband who's got severe mental health issues. There's loads of things going on and loads of demands on them. And then they get to come for 1 hour a week and just, you know, while they're that busy thinking, right, jab, backhand, hook, duck, oh, what am I doing? They can't think of all that other stuff because they're in the moment. And that's one of the beautiful things that sport gives you at every level. It can be entry level or it can be an Olympian and you have to be in the moment to do it well and commit yourself to it. And that's a great thing. So I would encourage anybody to go and try a variety of gyms because it's important to feel comfortable. If the first one you go to, not for you, fine, try a different one. And then just to, you know, just to do it with people who you feel comfortable with and to enjoy it. And if you really want to commit to it, for those who want to compete, then really try and be the very best you can be, because it's really important as women in every sport that we really, you know, if we're going to put ourselves out there and commit, that we change perceptions by being good.
And what we're trying to do so much on this podcast is change perceptions. And I feel really kind of, I'm a bit guilty of my perception of what a gym might be. And you say they're smelly. I imagine they're smelly. I also imagine that they, and I can't believe I'm saying this because I'm trying all the time, Annie and I are talking about, don't be intimidated, give a go and try it. And I imagine that I would walk into a gym and just feel like, first of all, I wouldn't have a clue what I'm doing because I wouldn't, but also intimidated. So you've got to be kind of careful that first step, I suppose, haven't you? But also to take it.
Absolutely. And that's another great thing that sports gives you is that, you know, that like that thing that Brené Brown says that I love, that you can choose courage and you can choose comfort, but you cannot have both. And that's absolutely true. And I think if you know why you're doing stuff and you believe in it enough, whether that's speaking up about things as we are doing or whether that's trying something new, it's worth choosing courage every time. And there's all sorts of things in life that people feel intimidated by. I remember doing my very first talk for a business and it was a women in business event. And I walked in and it was all these women with like perfect shoulder pads, like amazing trouser suits. And I was like, what am I doing here in my tracksuit? Oh my God, what am I doing? And at the end of the talk, you know, I was just honest. I was authentic. I shared my story. And you can forget that, yeah, there's differences in income and status and background and experiences, but we're all people and we all want, you know, to push ourselves, to have new experiences, to reach our potential, support others, whatever it is, that connection, that's what we want. And we want to do our best and enjoy stuff. And actually, if you can get past that, whether that's going to a business event, walking into a boardroom, trying something new, or going in a boxing gym, once you have, usually you will find that people are welcoming and you do belong there and you probably enjoy it. So I think sport teaches you that, doesn't it? That there'd be a lot of boxers who would never dream of turning up to a triathlon. I mean, for a start, they wouldn't be seen dead in Lycra because they'd be dead self-conscious, but because it's not what they used to. There's nothing wrong with Lycra, but if as a boxer, you can go in a gym with a baggy shirt and bag it and no one even looks at you. You would never dream of turning up to a triathlon event like that. So even those subtle differences would put someone off, yet you'd find it was a welcoming community when you get there. So I'd say go for it, whatever it is.
I think what we have to remember as well, you know, it is a misconception that I think I've talked about this before on the podcast. My best friend from school, who I'm still very close with, I said to her she needed some encouragement to go to a gym. I said, you're not going to do it on your own. Go and join some classes. She went, no, I hate gyms. It's full of people like you. It's a good job that we go way back and I wasn't insulted. And I said, well, to be honest, honestly, it's like, well, what are people like me? But it's probably not full of like scrawny sort of like people like me. Most gyms are full of very normal people going through the same stuff. And in fairness, I'd go to a gym and look around at most of the machines and go, God, I don't know how to use any of these. Yeah. But it's not just about whether you know how to work the machinery. People are always worried about what other people are thinking. And you know what? Yeah. I think most people are thinking about themselves rather than looking at other people and thinking, oh God, they look a bit daft, or maybe they need to lose a bit of weight or something like that. Most of us are thinking about ourselves and not other people.
And it's such a sad thing that, isn't it, that we're all human beings are at the centre of their own universe. And really, by that logic, everyone's thinking about themselves more than they're thinking about you. I think it's such a shame, particularly for women, because there's obviously more pressures on us for how we, you know, present or look physically or whatever. And it's such a shame that you think what an incredible gift this human body is, that, you know, women's bodies, what they're capable of doing, you know, even giving birth and creating life, like, you know, not all women, but a lot of women are able to do that. And, you know, we can walk, we can see, we can taste, we can smell. It's phenomenal what the human body can do, even when we don't push it to the elite athletic level. And yet we focus on how the bloody thing looks half our life. I mean, it's such a shame that we're looking at your bum or your this or your that. And I get why that is, but really, isn't that sad when actually what our bodies can do is pretty phenomenal?
Well, what you can do is absolutely phenomenal. It really is. Should we also talk a little bit about your training plans and about, for example, food and nutrition? Because that's got to be hugely important to you.
Yeah, I didn't really know that much about nutrition as a footballer. And so, of course, at the time, we didn't have that kind of input. We, you know, like now, you know, the top England women footballers and the you know, in the Women's Super League, they get nutritional advice. We didn't have that back then. I mean, we had hand-me-down kits, you know, never mind actual nutrition information. So I didn't know much about it. And it wasn't until, you know, the first couple of years in boxing, I was trying to learn and find out. And then when I got picked the England team and I got involved with GB boxing, they've obviously got an incredible setup, as have all of the Team GB sports. And then I met with a proper nutritionist who taught me through everything. And I was doing completely the wrong things. I didn't really have a clue what I was doing. And when I understood the macro nutrients and, you know, fats and carbs and how many I should be having per kilo of body weight per day and all of that, totally changed everything. And of course, as a boxer, it's a very, very, very strange relationship with food, a very unhealthy one, actually, because most boxers tend to be really, really strict in training and then just go completely off the wagon for the next few weeks after a fight. And there's been two occasions when I've actually been sick a few days after a fight because I've just eaten everything in sight that I haven't eaten for all those months, and my body's gone, what are you doing? And I've actually ended up throwing up. And that actually happened after, I didn't even have a fight, when it was due to fight in Middleton Arena. And sadly, there was a stabbing in the lobby. So 10 minutes before we were due to go out, my fight was called off and the whole show was cancelled, which is devastating because it cost me a fortune in getting my opponent over here and all that training. And I went to train the next morning to get it all out of my system because I was dead annoyed. And then just ate and ate and ate and ate everything that I haven't been able to eat for months. And by the Sunday night, I was throwing up. On a Monday morning, I've been sick three times and I felt so sorry for myself. And I was like, oh, this is, you know. And then I got the phone call saying, you've got the Commonwealth title fight in 8 weeks. And I was like, oh my God, that was it then. I was running around the front room shadow boxing like, right, I'm better now, I'm better. But I'd been moping about feeling sorry for myself. But yeah, how ridiculous is that? And that relationship with food is not great for a lot of boxers. And I imagine a lot of weight managed sports as well are a bit the same.
So do you have to lose weight before a fight, or how does it work for you?
Yeah, I mean, there are some boxers who are quite, walk around at close to their fighting weight, but most will have to, you know, lose a fair bit of weight before they fight. The most I've ever had to lose is after I had a routine surgery in 2016, and unfortunately they made a mistake and caused a chemical burn all over my leg, and I missed the Europeans, the Worlds, and I got very, very down. I was absolutely devastated, which, you know, that's one of the problems in sport. If your whole identity and, yeah, and meaning and purpose is in sport, then when that's taken away, you then suddenly have no identity, no purpose, no meaning in your life. And that's very unhealthy. And I've learned from that. But at the time, I was very much in that dark tunnel and coped with it mostly by eating my body weight in chocolate. I put on 20 kilos and that was a massive amount to have to lose. And I never, ever want to do that again because it's so hard losing weight. And a bit like you were saying, Annie, about people going in gyms, quite often people will say to me, oh, I've just done my first whatever class or my first 5K, but it's nothing like what you do. It's silly compared to what you do. It is not. Like, I feel comfortable in a gym environment. It's just part of my life. As for you all, it's just what you do every day. We don't even think about it. For people who label themselves as not sporty, who've had a fear of sport since being a kid and don't feel they belong, for them to go into a gym or to do a 5K or to set those goals is phenomenal. Absolutely incredible. So I actually don't see it like that. I think they are the inspirational ones because this is the norm to me. It's what I do. And you're talking about people who I've invited to stuff and they go, well, I haven't got a pair of trainers. And I go, what do you mean you haven't got a pair? And to me, I'm like, what do you do? Like, what do you put on your feet? Like, I wouldn't even, but they think it's bizarre that I have two pairs of high heels that I alternate depending on what I'm wearing.
Your high heels.
Well, they very quickly come off and get replaced with a pair of sparkly Toms. As soon as I've had to get on stage, I've got to put my pumps on. But yeah, it's that's incredible. How inspirational those people who do it who've never done it before. I think that's incredible.
Stacey, I can beat you. I've got 3 pairs of heels, and that's it. I haven't got any more. They don't come out very often either. Tell us what does the future in terms of sport look like for you now?
Well, I think in terms of boxing, it's, you know, I would love to fight for a world title after, you know, it's been a very, very tough couple of years of struggling with injury. I've been able to deal with it much better now than I did previously, because I have learned from previous experiences that when I allowed my entire being to be defined by sport, it wasn't a great place to be in when I was therefore injured. And I'm not an advocate for having a plan B for athletes. I don't think that's a good idea. It's a bit like, to me, it's like marrying someone and having a plan B person in case they don't work out. Because you're in love with sport. It has to be your plan A. And I think instead of having a plan B, which you only end up doing if you don't really get to do what you want, I think having other passions is an important thing to encourage people to do. Because then if something goes wrong in sport, it doesn't diminish that passion. It's still something you can be passionate about. So I think it's really important to encourage people to have other passions and meaning in their life. And that's certainly, something that's helped me over the last couple of years while I've been injured, is that I've had other things that have given me an identity and meaning and purpose. So I'll still be pursuing those alongside my sport, obviously.
We've also talked throughout this podcast, because we started really bizarrely, like literally the week before lockdown. So of course, Stacey, the gyms have been closed. You've been doing the online stuff. How much has it affected you, though, not being able to be in the gym, be part of the team, be part of that whole environment?
I think it impacts you massively, but I think I'm lucky in the sense that there's a couple of things that have helped me with that. One, when I played in America for a long time and I used to come home in the summers, I didn't have the team around me to train with, because there weren't other teams I could train with here because it was their off season. So I had to do all of my training on my own to get ready for the pre-season in America. So I got used to that. And then also having been injured a number of times, as you will do when you've been in sport as long as I have, you get used to having to push yourself and, you know, stay committed and dedicated despite what's going on around you, and just controlling the things that you can control and not focus on things you can't. And I think other things that sport teaches you is that there will be periods of change and things that massively impact your life that you haven't asked for, like Tokyo changing the day, you get injured. There's loads of things that happen that you can't do anything about. And I think when you stop resisting change, because change, if you're resisting it, is a struggle. And if you just embrace it instead, then it becomes, eventually it can lead to a positive. And that's how I'm thinking of this time, that whatever change is going on, try not to resist it and see it as a struggle. Instead, try and embrace it where possible. And I know from every other dark tunnel that I've been in, what follows is light, like the arrow being pulled back. You have to be pulled back before you can be propelled forward. So I try and believe in that and maintain hope in that. And I know it's a real struggle for a lot of athletes. I'm lucky that I'm in a sport where you can do a lot of shadow boxing and do a lot of sport-specific stuff. If you're I was talking to a friend of mine who's a triple jumper, and I was like, I could probably do a triple jump in my garden. I could probably do it in my bathroom. But for her, she needs like a load of space. Swimmers, been really difficult for them. So, you know, in some sports, it's been very difficult for them to keep doing what they're doing. And that's hard.
Stacey, if you don't have to answer if you don't want to, it might be a bit personal, but what does your boyfriend do?
That's what I was wondering, Annie. I didn't ask.
You didn't ask.
as a job.
What sports does he do?
None.
So how is it?
Lazy. I have to try and get him every excuse in the book, and I'll be doing circuits at home, and he's done pads for me, which is great. So I'm happy for that. But I'll say, do you want to do a circuit? And we'll do it. And honestly, we'll be in the middle of the circuit, and I have to be, you know, I'm an all or nothing type person, obviously, or I wouldn't have been an athlete. And like, you know, so I'm on the spin bike and it's like everything. I'm like, raging Tasmanian devil beast just thing on the bike. And then I'll, you know, hop over and I'll do the weights. And I'm like, everything's dead serious and real. Like, I've got my heart rate monitor on and it's, you know, whatever. Him, I'll look over and he's like on his phone and he's doing something else. And looking out the window, I'll be like, what are you doing? And be like, oh, my back's itching. I don't think. And I'm like, You can't not train because you've got an itchy back. What are you talking about? So we're totally different. But I think, you know, I think generally that works, doesn't it? If you, maybe if you were both, like, really, then maybe it wouldn't work. I don't know.
I mean, it must,
you need
it must
a yin
be,
and a yang.
You do. And it must be pretty tough if you think, for most men, you know, what's your girlfriend do? Well, you know, she's a boxer, ex-footballer, all the things that men would be really love to be good at. I mean, he doesn't want to get into an argument with you, really, does he? Let's be honest.
Well, this is the funny thing, that this gets said a lot, but it's interesting because you, when you think about that, you would, it's not something that ever gets said to male boxers. You would never say to a male boxer, I bet your girlfriend doesn't argue with you because you'd probably beat her up. Yet it's really acceptable and seen as funny for people to say that to me. And it's really interesting because this is the other thing of not separating the person. I'm a woman and I feel like a woman all the time. I feel like a woman when I'm boxing and I feel like a woman when I'm trying desperately hard to walk like a normal human being in high heels and a dress, which doesn't work out for me very well.
You look great in your dress, Daisy.
Yeah. I feel like me and a woman in both settings. Yet it's hard for people, and always has been, to see me as fully, if that's the right word, female and feminine, but also boxing. And actually, that's just a sport I do. It's not who I am. I don't go around punching people in the head all the time. But it's interesting, isn't it, how people will say stuff like that.
I'm glad you've picked me up on that one, because you're absolutely right. And let's be honest, hopefully none of us get into those kind of arguments with our other halves or anything.
But there's no but. I entirely agree with you, Stacey. Language, you're right, is so important, and also to turn around our own kind of like unconscious bias or whatever it might be. But on the other hand, the other thing about boxing, you know, it is, if you need it, it's going to be a useful skill, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. I've never had to use it. And I guess, you know, what all sports should try and teach you is communication and ways to use those skills that you've learned in sport to not be in a situation where you have to fight. But if I had to, hopefully I'd be able to.
You probably, do you know what, Stacey, probably the way you stand is probably different than the way I might do, for example.
Yeah, and your game face.
Right.
Luckily no one can see that game face, because I'm not good at the game face. Every time I've had to do a face off in boxing, I've ended up laughing my head off. I'm just too childish for it. I'm not very good at it.
Yeah, what are those face offs all about? Goodness me.
Yeah, no, I'm too friendly and jokey for that, mate. I can do it for about a second and I'm like, nice to meet you. Look, but not loads of luck. And anyway, bye. Yeah, I'm awful sorry. I'm crap at that, mate. I'm not very good at being a meanie.
Oh, brilliant.
I had to walk out of the room briefly. We had a really interrupted podcast. That's the thing, isn't it, about a bit working from home, as we all are. You know, there's different things going on. Is there a next fight, Stacey?
We don't know yet. I think what's really great, though, is that there's an amazing few weeks coming up for women's boxing. Obviously, Eddie Hearn, through Matchroom Boxing, has set up some amazing women's fights, and men's too. But, you know, there's women, some really, really big fights, world title fights on. So I'm really excited about that. And it's going to give women's boxing the showcase it needs and deserves. And also some domestic rivalries, which really need to get people, you know, interested in it and viewing it and so on. And hopefully, you know, that'll change a few opinions, and hopefully we can make a move on changing some other things, like having ring card girls in my sport. Just because it's always been that way doesn't mean it's right. And I think we're at a time when we shouldn't have, you know, I don't think there's a coincidence why in the sports where that exists, it's more difficult for women to make progress. Like, we still don't have a Tour de France for women. Women still, after proving themselves as exceptional endurance cyclists, still don't get to do the Tour de France. Yet it is perfectly acceptable for them to be either side of the winning male on the podium, giving him a peck on the cheek and a bunch of flowers. And that's just wrong to me. We need to be doing better at representation of women in sport, not just sports women.
Yeah, and Stacey, you can see you're absolutely passionate about it, and there's still a lot of work to be done, isn't there?
Definitely, and I hope that, you know, when, you know, ultimately sport is very entertaining. You know, when you go and watch boxing or darts or whatever it might be, sport is the entertainment. You're not in a gentleman's club where you would expect to see that. I mean, you'd be a bit disappointed if you paid and you didn't. But I think sport is entertainment. I don't think we need women to be sexualized and to be a glamorous accessory, as people call it, at sporting events. I think it's very confusing in a time when we're trying to teach young boys about, you know, harassment, respect for women, dignity, when they go to what is a sports event and get to hear male role models sat around about them shouting extremely sexualized things at women. It's totally acceptable. I don't think it should be. And I hope that my niece, when she's older, looks back at my fights and says, why is the people, you know, women walking around with a piece of cardboard, and you know, people are shouting things at them, and I say, oh, it's not a thing anymore, and she's like, wow, was that a thing? And I hope it isn't anymore. And that's why I've not used ring girls. I've nothing against them personally, but I've always had kids as mascots, just like we have at Wimbledon at football. We know that's a positive thing for sport and kids involved.
On the plus side, Annie, triathlon has, I mean, I'm right in saying, is pretty equal, isn't it, on most things, isn't it?
I think it is.
Apart from perhaps what they have to wear sometimes.
Yes, that's questionable. Yes, it is. I agree with that. But in terms of how the sport has developed, it definitely developed, unlike the marathon, for example, where women weren't allowed to race a marathon. Women have always been able to race triathlon, and particularly over the Ironman distance, where the sport actually came from originally. And you just would have to really argue against that one, because from an endurance point of view, we're looking at women now as ultra marathon runners, and they're actually coming out on top, you know, ahead of the guys. And I just think physiologically, you can see why that happens. And it's great now that women are getting the chance. It's not about proving, is it? But it's showing what we're physically capable of.
And look at the woman today who ran from Land's End to John O'Groats and beat a record. I mean, you know, there are some brilliant female, as you say, endurance athletes out there. Stacey, I'm going to let you go because I know you've got a Zoom class to do later. We've taken up far too much time of yours. You're just brilliant.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure, and thanks for having me. And it's really important, these kind of discussions and conversations, and also for me and other women to meet women like all of you, and for them to meet us, because it's, you know, even when you're involved in it, you can still get caught up in this idea that we don't exist, and we do. So it's really important for that to be out there.
And I know on every podcast I said I'm going to do something, but Stacey, you and I work in the same place. I live near where you do. I'm going to be brave. And at some point, can I come and see the gym?
Yeah, of course you can. Absolutely. Come down and do a training session with it. You'd absolutely love boxing.
I think I would,
It's a really good challenge. It is really good. And I think if you love those endorphins and that, I mean, there's nothing like it, is there? It is like a drug. And for people, I feel dead sorry for people who can't connect with that, because I just love it. And, you know, I can get, like I'm sure you can, to the gym and feel really grumpy, really miserable, really knackered, do a session and I come out like a minion. I'm like, yay, woo, like that thing out of Ribena. It's unbelievable what it does for you. So you'd love it. I think you'd really love it. You can
I'm there.
On the plus side, I went for a run with a friend of mine who hates running with other people. I managed to persuade her to go for a run with me. We went for a long, it was a longish run. It was 14K and it was over difficult terrain. So we came back, and honestly, I realised that I'm so annoying after I come back. Like, I'm like that minion for hours afterwards.
Yeah.
Hours.
Me too. My mum's like that. My mum's an England age category runner.
She is, isn't she?
Yeah, and we're both the same. Like, we just, in fact, we took my boyfriend on a bike ride with us, which to us was like fun. It was dead enjoyable. And he was like, oh my God, he got cramped that I videoed him, which was cruel. But we got out of the car and he only crossed the road to go into like the local store, and he couldn't walk. And he was like, screaming. I was like, we've had a fun day out. What's going on with you? But to me and my mum, we were like
buzzing,
just chattering all the way through. Yeah. So I guess it's different for everyone.
We just need to pass it on, don't we? Oh, Stacey, so great to talk to you. Thank you so much. I'm going to come to your gym and you'll have to show me what to do.
Definitely. Definitely. You can all come along.
I'll wear some baggy stuff. I won't wear my lycra. How's that?
You wear whatever you want. Wear whatever you want.
Stacey, thank you so much.
Thank you, Stacey.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, everyone.
Annie, what a refreshing podcast that was. We've talked about so many things, haven't we? Open water swimming, running, triathlon. But to talk about boxing, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, and I think what she does is, you know, changes, really helps change perception in women in sport and what we can and we can't do. You know, I mean, great girl, incredibly smart, lots of fun, but loved boxing and football. And her argument was, why not?
She's changing things, isn't she? Which is fantastic.
fantastic.
Really is, absolutely. To see the work that she's putting in now in terms of her charity, you know, the passion for me that she has, watching her and what she gives back, you know, helping change lives like that is just amazing, because, you know, there's not that many people in the world that do that. You know, we're all kind of too wrapped up in lives, family, work, but she's out there genuinely sort of changing people's lives.
Thank you, Annie, and thank you so much as ever for all your reviews and ratings. We'd love you to leave one as it helps others find us, which is fantastic, and lots of you have been finding us, so brilliant. Thanks this week to Women in Specs, who's left a review. She says, I love listening to these podcasts during my daily trots. Not only has the running kept me sane, but inspiring stories have kept me focused. Thank you. If you've got any thoughts, any comments or suggestions for guests as well, do drop us a line. And do you know what, Annie, they are also keeping me company on my runs as well, which is good. And don't forget to check out the Her Spirit app as well. It's a community of inspiring women everywhere to be fitter, stronger and healthier. There are lots more details, lots of tips and also online classes and advice on the Her Spirit website and the app.
That's great news, isn't it? And I hope you're running lots, Lou, because, you know, I know how you need to get those miles in.
I'll be better now. I'm drinking more water, Annie. More water, yeah,
exactly.
As you said.
Keep drinking water. It's good for you to stay hydrated. Don't overdrink, but, you know, just enough so you stay hydrated.
Oh, take care, Annie. Big hug.
Take
See you
care.
Soon.
Big hug. Bye.
Hi, my name's Mel Berry and I'm the co-founder of Her Spirit. Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast and we hope you found it useful. I'd just like to say thanks to our sponsors, Medichex, who without their support, this wouldn't have been possible. Medichex offers simple to use blood tests. Wanting to strengthen your immunity or check for underlying conditions, they offer a home test with doctor's reviewed results. Just go to medichex.com to find out more. And remember, together we've got this. Have a great day.